Welcome to Dry Hard Pod, a weekly podcast on navigating life as a dry millennial.
I'm Katie. I live in Eugene, Oregon, and I have been alcohol-free for 228 days.
Hey, I'm Kaylee. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I am 318 days alcohol-free. Yay!
That's awesome. You're awesome. I'm only alcohol-free because you are. Well, I was inspired by your being free of alcohol.
I honestly, like, it's weird because now it doesn't feel as big of a deal, like, being over the hump and being almost a year in. But I honestly didn't believe that this was something that I was ever going to do long term. I just kept telling myself that, like, I'd figure out some form of moderation. So.
Yeah. No, I can relate 100% with that. I genuinely never believed in myself. Like, or thought that it people did that.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I didn't want to. Like, I didn't want to quit drinking for a really long time.
Yeah.
I was like, I love this. Like, why would I want to stop? It's so fun.
Especially those nights that you only had, like, 3 or 4 drinks and you were, like, buzzed, but you could still manage what you were doing. And the next day you woke up, I woke up and was like, wow, I'm such a good drinker. And then the next time I would drink, I would black out and cry. And Steve and I would get into a huge fight. So it's just like, oh, wait, just kidding. I'm not a good drinker still,
yeah.
Even though I did it once.
I know. It's crazy to be like, wow, I like don't really cry that much anymore.
Right? Isn't that weird? Yeah. No, I agree. I actually have had to consciously like sit in bed and watch something sad and be like, I'm going to cry and just let myself feel this because it used to be constant.
I'd always just like get super drunk and then get really embarrassed and hate myself. And then I would cry because I was embarrassed. And then I would cry more because I was embarrassed about crying. So
I definitely had, there were a couple, I mean, there were tumultuous nights where tensions would run high, especially like early 20s when Michelle and I lived together. You know, we just would go dancing and there were plenty of nights like that. But as I got older, I seemed to have been crying the day after more. That was the day after drinking was always way harder for me than the night of drinking.
Yeah. And like when you get older too, I feel like those feelings, like your serotonin and just your like physical body doesn't bounce back as easy.
Not at all. Yeah. Well, and I think my anxiety increased too as I got older and started settling more into who I was, but was still actively drinking. That's when the next day was like, what did I say? Do they think I'm dumb? You know, what did I do? Let me look at my phone. What pictures did I take? And then, you know, I really genuinely thought that would go away when I stopped drinking, but I still pretty much feel like that the day after. Like, what did I do? What did I say? Do they hate me? Are we friends?
Totally. The only thing is, like, you can actually remember everything
exactly.
You said.
Exactly.
So yeah. You're like, did that specific thing that I said, was that weird? Mm-hmm. Whereas before it was like, I have no idea what the fuck happened last night.
Yeah.
But
so I guess that kind of ties in our dry hard, you know, like still try hard to this day with or without alcohol. I'm like, how can all these people like me?
Yeah. Oh my God. And we'll most likely have another episode on perfectionism and people pleasing and all of that.
Anxiety and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of stuff that like doesn't go away with not drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. But the way I thought about it is it almost kind of like peeled the Band-Aid off so that like the stuff could, I don't know, it's a really gross metaphor, but like so that, you know, it can like breathe and just like so you can like start actually like digging into stuff. Life is still like always going to be life, but it's a lot easier when you don't have that extra like,
and you're present in it too and making making decisions for yourself instead of letting things happen to you. I feel like is the biggest thing that's changed, you know, for me. So
yeah, like the confidence too of, I don't know where I read it, and if I find the person, I'll, you know, of course, credit them, but it was like not drinking alcohol is like really kind of not doing what everyone else is doing, and I don't know, I resonated with that, and I was like, wow, I actually feel like really proud of myself, like I don't have self-control in a lot of other areas, mm-hmm. Which is why
same.
This yeah, like this is still hard for me and was really hard to start this journey, but it is really cool to be like, oh, I just like don't need to do that. And then I can like actually just like get up and leave and drive home whenever I want.
Which yeah, is which until 228 days ago, I could have never said that. Well, let's get to it here. We just did. We can do this. So
I know. That's so easy.
So this is mine and Kaylee's first podcast, first episode and first podcast. But we just thought it would be a great chance to talk about our experience living alcohol-free lives. We come from really different backgrounds and our relationship with alcohol are totally different. But we found that we've had so much in common with how our drinking habits made us feel. And we thought a lot of other people might feel the same. So we just thought it would be good to put it out there.
Yeah, we're really excited and we hope that you all like it. And today's episode, we're going to talk about our history with booze, kind of starting from our fragile teen years to our equally fragile 30s. So, you know, this whole episode might be a trigger warning for folks, but just kind of where we started and how we got to where we are now.
We kind of shared a couple of drinking stories the other night when we were just outlining, you know, what today's episode was going to be about. I brought up a time that I first remember drinking around the age of 13, but I was thinking more, Kaylee, and I definitely do not think that was my first time drinking. I, before then, had been making risky decisions, and I remember specifically. So I was a sixth grader, and I had a friend who lived with her grandparents. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, I've totally heard that. Like, yeah, that they're just kind of, like, not really paying attention, and they go to bed super early, so it's,
yeah,
like...
Yeah. Yeah, and they were dolls. I mean, they were so sweet, and I would never want to say anything to offend anybody, but my speculation now as an adult and as, you know, through my own experience, they were definitely alcoholics. They had at least some sort of negative relationship with alcohol that affected their health and their lifestyle, and also probably their acknowledgement of what was happening in their home, probably.
That makes sense, though, because, like, I feel like when you are drunk, it's a lot harder to spot out when other mm-hmm. people are drunk. But when mm-hmm. you're sober, it's so easy now to be so like, easy. Oh, you were drunk. Like, yeah. So you probably got away with it easier because they were just like, oh, you silly kids.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that there's actually I just watched this really awesome video on alcohol. It was by Osmosis Psy on Instagram or something like that. I'll make sure that I include that information later. They did this great alcohol video, the scientific research behind it and exactly what it does to like your receptors and your nerves, and it actually slows some of those identifiable those things we use to identify drunkenness. It slows them down. It, you know, it actually removes your ability to do so, just like with driving and, you know, picking up on social cues and all of that. So that's really interesting. But
crazy.
Yeah. So I remember the day we were going to a band concert. A lot happened after band concerts. We were riding the bus home. We were in sectionals. I played the flute. It's no big deal. I was fourth chair, though.
I played the flute in middle school.
You know that? Yeah. So we did well at the I don't think I cared at all, actually, what we did at the band concert. But we all took the bus back, and I had two friends. One was a boy, and one was a girl. And I wouldn't say that they were necessarily friends yet, but I was a sixth grader. They were in eighth grade, and I really wanted attention.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Period. And they gave it to me, and I really liked feeling included. I always, my whole life, felt like someone who just never was really, like, loved. And I've always, you know, I won't get too deep into that right
that
now.
That can be a whole other podcast.
It's a theme. It's a life theme. So I will never forget this, and I feel like it's pivotal. We used to listen to Sublime and NOFX on the back of the bus. Keep in mind, when I was a sixth grader, it was 2002, 2001, 2003, in that time. So I just remember, you know, sitting in the back of the bus, and the guy who was with us was like, hey, we should all hang out after this. And
okay.
The girl that we were with was like, yeah, let's go back to my house, like her grandparents. And she had this bedroom up in the attic. And I specifically remember it being like the only room up there. It was a full upper floor of a house, but like the house was like this at the top. So she had like the whole space upstairs. There was like a bathroom down the hall, but then her grandparents were downstairs.
Katie was making a triangle with her hands, by the way, listener.
Yeah. I'm like, this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a pyramid. Yeah. A whole pyramid. Yeah. And that's dangerous too, because at some.
So hot up there.
Well, and some friends, it's like, oh, keep the door open. And, you know, like the parents' room is close. But when you have a whole attic room to yourself, it's like, bye.
There was no supervision at all. Zero.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, I just remember each of us taking a couple of shots of Southern Comfort.
Oh.
That was the grandparents' drink of choice. So I think we just took it from their half gallons.
Oh my god!
in glass cups.
Oh.
And like put straws in them and was like, oh, just going upstairs. Or maybe in Coca-Cola bottles, like the little ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we would do that. And so anyways, we were taking a couple shots. They taught me. I had never, I mean, not to my knowledge. I'm really thinking back as hard as I can, but they taught me how to do that, which I was so grateful for at the time, because I was like, I'm gonna fucking die if I keep drinking this way. Like I wasn't swallowing it correctly. Like it was, I was throwing up in my mouth, you know. Yeah, so we did that, and then we started smoking weed out of an apple.
Yes!
Like, directly after that. And I don't think I got high. Like, it was very, I had no idea what the fuck I was doing. And I was just trying to be cool. But shortly after that, the three of us started making out. That was my first real experience with that. It was sloppy and awful, and I can still kind of remember how clammy we all were, and it was weird. How's that?
That sounds like the coolest after a band performance.
Ever?
Ever, yeah.
So, after that, I remember the friend's grandparent, like, yelling up the stairs. What are you doing up there? Why is the door closed? What's that smell? And it was like very much so handled, like, don't worry about it. Mind your own business. There was not a lot of, like, I was terrified. I was going to shit my pants. My mom is the scariest person. I still know.
Yeah.
I'm terrified of her.
Did you have to wait it out in that hot ass attic just until you were sober enough to go home?
No. The grandparents invited us to go get popcorn shrimp at the local bar down the street. And we went to Maple Grove Tavern. We literally went to Maple Grove Tavern and we ate popcorn shrimp and drank diet sodas, and I was just fucked up. I don't know. And then I spent the night there, and the next day was awful.
Oh my, that's so crazy to be like, hey, what are you kids?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what's going on up there?
Well, do you want to go to a bar?
Yeah, exactly. And I think they were like, okay, well, they're better off with us than if we leave them here by themselves. Like, I definitely think they had their suspicions.
Right.
And I remember one of them, the grandpa, being like, what's wrong with you two? But like very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like avoiding any altercation, like not addressing the issue. Definitely knew what the issue was. Could smell it on us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my first real experience that I can actually physically remember. So
by the time you got home, you were good. You were able to like get past scary mom and like go about your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure I overcompensated the next day and she was like, this is weird.
I made you breakfast in bed, mother.
Yeah. Let's go walk together. Let's go shopping. I was always pretty good at that. So, but she definitely knew. The next time I went over there, I had to, they had to call and do like a confirmation that I was going to be there. So my mom was pretty serious, so much that I just lied to her because she wouldn't let me do anything. So, and she always found out, and I was always like, you know, shamed or beaten. So here we are. I love you, mom, really though. Like, good job.
I know. I was always grounded. It's mm-hmm. funny because I was never grounded for the bad things I did. Like, I would be grounded for, like, eating an extra granola bar or, like, not being home.
What?
Like, just the craziest stuff. I got grounded for accidentally, like, getting a chocolate chip on a chair and it, like, melted into the chair and, like, made a mess. And I'm really clumsy. So.
Isn't it fucked up what we remember? Like, the chocolate chip. You'll remember that.
Yeah. And yeah. One thing I did that was really bad that I just could not break the habit was I would leave my razor, and I had like a little half brother who was like a toddler at the time. I would leave my razor like in the bathroom. And so it was like he could stumble in there and get it. And I just could not. I kept fucking doing it. Like I was like, I'm not doing it on purpose. I obviously don't want him to hurt himself. I'm just dumb. Like, I'm just a dumb kid.
Actually, I'm gonna just chime in here because I read a lot of parenting stuff, and sometimes the more like shame and punishment you attach to an action, the more likely your children are to do it. So the more attention you bring to something, the more difficult it is for them to break the habit.
Wow, that makes sense, because I was in a like circle of being grounded all the time. Yeah. Just a rotation.
I feel like what a doctor would say now is like they buy like a pretty razor case or let Kaylee pick out a case that she would want to put her razor in instead of punishing her.
Yeah.
And that would probably be a safer way to do it.
Oh.
I don't know. That. Maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't, but
yeah, but yeah. I was definitely grounded when I was caught drinking the first time. And it was because they were like, we're not mad that you got fucked up. Like, we're mad that we, like, didn't know where you were and you weren't safe. And, like, you would have been in way less trouble if you just told us what was going on. And I'm like, that's a trap, because you would have never let me go. You would have never been, like, approved. Please enjoy.
Yeah. You're not going. Sorry. Nice try, Kaylee. What do you feel, like, what comes to mind when you think about your first time drinking or, like, the first time that there may be consequences for your actions while you're drinking?
It's interesting because during that time, it wasn't just alcohol. It was definitely like anything that felt reckless or that would alter my mood. And so it always kind of came, it never really started in like a fun, happy, like, let's party, I just want to be popular place. But it came from like, I'm trying to like get fucked up because I don't want to like be who I am right now. Or, you know, when you're that age, you don't feel like you have control over anything. And one of my themes that you'll probably hear in you know, future episodes, if you keep listening, which we hope you do, is like having really low self-esteem and really low confidence. And so I just kind of like really didn't like myself and didn't like my living situation. And so I would chug like 5 beers and just like go to school.
Wow.
And then like
I was too afraid. I was always too afraid to do that.
I definitely, like, the crazy thing is like I didn't get caught. And at that time I was in like a health class, and I was like, is really like no one noticing? But I didn't want anyone to notice, and I didn't want to get caught. So I was very much like trying to play it cool. Like, okay, like I have to go to school. I have to make sure I don't get kicked out. Like, I never did anything reckless like that, but I was like, oh, this kid is going to like hand me a pill in health class and I'm not even going to ask what it is and I'm going to take it.
That is so interesting. This is just one specific scenario where our drinking habits are so different, because I feel like I would go for the pill. I would go for anything that was going to get me fucked up. However, I wanted attention. And I didn't want attention. I needed attention. Like, something in my inner self was screaming, like, help, I'm not okay. And that played out through my teens and my 20s and dating and friendships. And, like, it kind of comes full circle what we were talking about earlier. So, yeah, it's interesting how different those two things are.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I wanted attention too, or, like, different topic, but I literally got like peer pressured into smoking a cigarette. Like, someone put it in my mouth and lit it, and I was like, okay, 15.
I was like, I want to be cool. Let me have it.
Yeah. And 15 years later, I'm like, thanks, asshole.
I know,
for
right?
that God. Addiction.
But, if I could take one thing back, it would be smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it is interesting. It's like the same compulsive habit, but like different reasons that are kind of driving it. So I also like really liked the feeling of being fucked up. Like I would take Adderall. Yeah. I remember like my boyfriend at the time broke his collarbone skateboarding, and like I took some of his painkillers. I was just all about it. I was like, yeah, let's do it up. Like let's get super drunk. I was getting high after school like every day. And my dad had this conversation with me that's like the weirdest conversation, where he was like, listen, like I don't care if you like go to the occasional party and you like drink and like, you know, like do coke or whatever. And I was like, whoa, what? Like I'm 16. What? Like what do you, but you know, he grew up in the 80s, and so I'm like,
okay,
no.
But I have to interject.
I know.
My mom was born in 68. So she also grew up in the 80s,
yeah,
right, in Portland.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, if I catch you with a drug ever, I will fucking kick you out of my house. Like, I was like absolutely terrified, but still did it. Like, don't care enough. Obviously, you're not that scary, I guess. But
yeah. And you just think you'll. Yeah. Yeah.
And my mom also, though, very, you know, just is like, it's dumb. I've done it. Don't do it. That was it. That was the explanation that we got growing up. It's like, it's not worth it. My, you know, the boy that I thought was my boyfriend through elementary and middle school gave me a Dilaudid at band practice in the morning, because I was at a private school. And so we had to bus over to the public school. And when I got there, he was like, here, take this. So I took a Dilaudid and I passed out in mass. That same day I passed out. And we'll come back to that. That's a good story. So we'll have to come back. But dude, why how did the rest of that conversation go with your dad? That's interesting.
Oh god, well, he was like, why are your eyes so red? And I like literally closed my eyes and was like, what are you talking about? Like, don't look at me. And yeah, and I was like, I guess it like went well. I probably still did it for a while, but then my junior year, I started like really working full time, and I was taking really hard classes, and I like kind of fell out with the friends that I was doing all that stuff with. And I was totally a loner, like, from that point on, really. And so I don't know. I can't, like, probably because I just could never hang out with them and was always grounded. So they stopped inviting me to stuff because I could never go.
Right.
So then I stopped smoking weed. Like, I smoked my entire sophomore year and then stopped my junior year, and didn't really do it that much my senior year either. But my senior year was when I like started definitely like getting into drinking, and then it just like exponentially the habit grew from like my early 20s, and then like really pretty much up until I stopped 318 days ago.
That's interesting. Yeah, I had a big group of friends in middle school and high school. I always wanted to be cool, though, and I was cool and nice mostly. I don't think I was that bad. I was intense and competitive, so, you know, my grades struggled. My freshman sophomore year, I lived with my dad out here in Oregon because my mom couldn't handle me because of the Dilaudid episode.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's so scary. Like, as a parent, that would be such a scary situation, but like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Yeah, it is still funny.
It is. And we'll go into all of the parents will have to be their own episode.
Yeah, we'll definitely
like the family construct and where we come from. But
yeah, and our parents' relationship with alcohol will definitely,
yes,
be mentioned. But
yes. Yeah, we'll have to do like and not that everyone has to, you know, use this word. Like, we're pretty loose on whatever you want to call yourself. We're here for it. But I am on a Reddit subreddit. Is that what you call it?
Subreddit
of adult children of alcoholics.
Ooh.
Is the name of the subreddit. It's fucking gold. There's so many good things in there. Even if you're not a child of an alcoholic or parents that drink at all, it's just such good testament and like perspective from different people's upbringing. So we'll have to circle back around to all that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's a lot we can cover there.
Yeah, so like I've been doing for years in therapy.
Yeah.
Still doing all of that. Going
please,
that.
Please subscribe to this podcast if you just want to hear our therapy sessions.
I know. But I was thinking about when we were talking about like the way that our relationship with alcohol escalated or changed over time. And my sophomore year, I got into some pretty bad stuff. I was lying a lot, I was sneaking around. I was being like sexually active with people outside of my relationship, my committed relationship in high school. Sneaking to neighbors' houses with older guys. I mean, not no one, you know, in their 20s when I was a teenager, but definitely older than me.
Yeah.
And, you know, sneaking around the backs of my parents, and then it seeped into school life and people found out and I was being threatened and I moved. I was just not making great choices for myself.
Yeah.
But I did clean up my junior and senior year. I moved back to Michigan, lived with my mom, got back into sports. I was taking Adderall. I was stealing my stepdad's Adderall, actually, from the bathroom cabinet. I don't even think – I mean, actually, he probably does have ADHD. I feel like it's so much more common. But when you're that age, you're not using it for – I wasn't using it as a prescription medication.
Right? No.
I was getting fucked up.
No, yeah.
But then something happened. I got a job at Steak and Shake. Which, if for those of you who don't know, they are the best steak burgers and milkshakes around. There are like 600 of them throughout the U.S. It's a chain restaurant. It's like a diner. And I started working there, and that place fucked me up. I will tell you what.
To make you drink more?
Yes. Yeah, it's just the culture there, you know?
Yeah.
And I was in community college, and I should have gone away for college, and I just didn't. I met this guy at Steak and Shake who is much older than me with children and a pretty heavy criminal background. And we derailed my life for about 6 months. but I got back on track. No, I never got back on track after that. No, that's basically when.
You're back on track now.
Yeah, here at 30. But no, I was 19 when all of that was going on. But then into my early 20s, I at least met like a core group of people that I felt like started to care about me and that I cared about deeply. And those formed into genuine relationships into my late 20s. And not that all of our habits were great together, but, you know, it's like who you grow up with kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So
I feel like as you get older, the drama definitely kind of falls away if you're, I don't know, doing it right. like there's any right or wrong way to do stuff. But and I'm sure there's still people who have a lot of like dramatic people or toxic people in their life. Oh, yeah. But I feel like each year, like in terms of my relationships that I have with other people, my relationship with myself, it just like gets better and better. So I felt that way in my 20s too, where like I wasn't dealing with a lot of the same like bullshit from high school and was like actually starting to meet friends that I really liked. It's just the activity was still always like around
alcohol
and drinking and going out and dancing, and it was so much fun.
Oh my gosh, so much dancing.
And it's so easy to romanticize it and be like, God, I really miss when I was 23 and I used to go out dancing with my friends all the time. And like you think that when you stop drinking, like you're going to lose all of those things that you look back and like kind of romanticize around alcohol, but that really like I don't know. It was like the lubricant to help get you there, but and like get you to the club. But
so the interesting part about that, too, is that like the part that I romanticize is that really great part where you're three drinks in and you're having fun and you're giggling and you remember it. Right. Like,
yeah,
that was always the goal. But we didn't stop drinking once we got to that point. And then things get sloppy and not fun. And the next day you're really paying for it. And so I think there's part of that that we did really love, and then it just escalated from there. And not just for, you know, this is a common thing to happen. This is a, you know, societal issue in my opinion, that from those ages of 19 to 24, you're just meant to black out every night and it's normal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
so
you feel antisocial if you're sitting at home. Mm-hmm. And I still struggle with that. And thankfully, I find a lot of other things to do. And I'm still working on that list of like, what's non-alcohol related that can get me out of the house. But like, especially in Oregon in the winter, like it is hard.
Well, at that age, too, we were still discovering so much about ourselves.
Yeah, I didn't know what I liked.
No, and not having any way to communicate or even know what healthy boundaries were at that age. So saying no was just not an option. Whether you were the asker or, you know, the one being asked, like, you just did it because you wanted to be liked and be around your friends and, like you said, not be at home, bored, and not liking yourself.
Totally. And I think for me, when I started to have to be like, I want to be the perfect drinker, you know, I want to be the person who can go out to the bars and have three cocktails and live it up and dance and then like go home and go to bed at a decent, like at midnight, not 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. and
4 a.m. Yeah. After you got done scrolling on your phone. Yeah.
Yeah. And but I'm such a puker and drinking always makes me really sick and I chase that feeling and there's something in me, some sort of like addiction trigger that when I start drinking, I will not just have three drinks. Like I will, like I'll drink a bottle of wine until it's gone. I'll have five cocktails, six, like as long as we're there and the bar's open, I'm going to order drinks until we leave because I'm just like wanting to increase or enhance, even though I know that there's a tipping point and that five is going to make me sick. Like I just still would go for it. And then I'd go in the bathroom at the bar and puke and get something to eat and just keep rallying.
Yeah. Yes. I totally relate to that. I think that our like tenacity for drinking as many drinks as possible was pretty similar.
And you were good at puking and rallying too.
I was going to say, we used to buy those $2.99 bottles of wine from Circle K because we lived right across the alley or right across High Street.
Yeah, yeah.
We would pregame with that and then we would go out and not always get free drinks. Like we weren't those, we aren't, I mean,
but we're you hot. Guys knew also.
But we're not conventionally hot enough to drink for free. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you totally are. But also,
but
for the, you know, for the listeners who don't already, who aren't already our friends and family who are listening, Katie and I know each other before this podcast and have been friends for probably almost 10 years at this point.
Yeah.
So we,
yeah, we're coming on 10 this fall, I think.
Yeah, which is crazy. So we kind of met each other in this phase, in this like early 20s phase where we were all going out all the time. And so I remember it was like something that was celebrated where it was like, dude, Katie, you're so awesome. Like you can just puke and rally. Like you can just go throw up and then you can keep going. Like we all loved it. Like we thought it was this superpower that you had.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember walking up to a bar and looking back at my friends and saying, I'm going to puke. Hang on just a second. I would
literally. It was so casual.
I know. You can't see me right now to all of our listeners, but I wish you could because I was just so good at just like bending my head out and just you know,
yeah,
little throw
just
up.
Pinkies
and then
up,
just
little.
Walking right up. Yeah. Walking right up to the bouncer and giving him my ID and just getting in the bar. Mm-hmm. Like, no problem. Which should have been a huge indication of my body's response to alcohol. If we're being honest, I think we used to joke about it too. Like, oh, that can't be good. But like, it actually is not good for your body. Anyways, but yeah, I would just dance. And I was always, I think, anyways, in the way that I see myself, was the friend that was sneaking to the bar to drink more than the other friends. So I would do double backs and be like, oh, I have to go to the bathroom. But really, I knew that it was getting close to midnight and I didn't feel like I was having as much fun as everyone else.
Yeah.
And I would take secret shots.
Yeah, because you feel like you need to like catch up and be at other people's level or like.
Yes, even though I was at least drinking a quarter more than everyone else with us.
Yeah.
At all times.
Yeah.
For sure. And then I would vomit in the bathroom. And then just go right out to the dance floor. And I would do it consistently until the last call. And the bartenders always were so annoyed with me. I'd be covered in sweat from dancing, having the best time of my life, and then just like sprint to the bar for last call and order a shot and take another shot there. And then be so upset when the DJ would be like, okay, we're shutting the music off, like you have to go. And me, I was like, I just got here. I just took another shot. Let's dance. And they're like, it's 2:30, like you have to go.
Yeah, like we're done.
So yeah, yeah. I just had I never picked up on how people felt about my drunkenness.
Yeah.
Strangers specifically. My friends loved it. We all had a blast. I mean, not all the time I could be a bee, you know, but like for the most part, we always laughed and felt like shit the next day.
Yeah, but then that would be a thing where it was like, oh my God, we all feel like shit. Like, let's go out to brunch. Let's like eat. Like,
let's have Bloody Marys.
Yeah, let's have Bloody Marys and have a giant ass burrito, like breakfast burrito. And then the Bloody Mary would make me, and the like heavy food would make me so tired that my Sundays mm-hmm. were literally like half spent just sleeping in bed. Like, yeah, I would wake up,
same,
get brunch with a Bloody Mary or two or like three, and then I'd go home and take a nap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I would always, so I did that sometimes, but I had this FOMO so bad that I would like punish myself on a Sunday. So I'd be like, well, I'm going to go on a hike and invite like four people and see who can come, and then, you know, like hike my hangover away. I was super guilty of doing things like that. Ooh. And even until the last year, until 2020, I was active all the time. Fitness is like a huge part of my life, but my experience now with it is so much better than it was when I was doing it after feeling guilty for drinking. Yeah, that's a whole nother topic.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Fitness. And yeah.
Definitely. Because for me, it would be the guilt of the food that I ate while I was drinking. Like, you know, especially mm-hmm. like at 2:30 a.m. when the bars close, it's like, oh, well, I can get like this, like, shout out to Doko, who was always open till like 4 a.m. in Eugene. But also, like, there was this guy that would be outside the bar just selling like Costco hot dogs, but for like $5.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah. I think he's still there. I hope he's doing great. He was,
that's awesome.
He was a lifesaver. He probably like helped a lot of people.
Haley, he actually probably saved some people's lives.
Yeah.
By food. 100% agree.
Seriously.
With you.
So shout out to Doko, shout out to Hot Dog Guy. But and then I would just be like, oh, I've been trying to eat healthier and eat, like, no matter what weight I was at, I always felt like I should be doing better in that area. And so I just feel mm-hmm. super, super guilty, and then not do anything about it. I like wouldn't exercise. I would still just like get a shitty brunch and sleep and be like,
self-load.
Yeah, like, oh, this is I'm just a sack of shit now forever.
I feel like we need to cut back and talk about something really quick. This is my question for you, Kaylee.
Ooh.
What type of 20s subculture did you feel like you belonged to in your drinking habits? Because there's so many, right? Like, I wasn't part of a sorority. I didn't live on campus. That was not my experience. And so many people who are 30-something now, millennials, feel like their college beer pong and football games like jump started their relationship with alcohol, or bad relationship with alcohol. So I was just curious for you.
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I definitely felt like I missed out on that part of college. Like, I went to college in the same city that I was born and raised in. I didn't really understand the idea of paying a lot of money to go to a sorority to make friends when I already had friends, you know, that I met elsewhere and wanted to live by myself. And I definitely met some people from class that took me to sorority parties, and I had a blast. Even someone who was like, wanted to identify as like the anti-sorority girl, like, oh, I'm not like that. I'm like hip. I like to shop at American Apparel. I'm like, you know, cooler than that. No, they were all really nice people. They were all super welcoming, and I had an amazing time. But I think if I did do that, and, you know, made strong friendships there, it would have, I don't know, I guess I it's not been that long since I quit drinking, but I think it would have like really gotten me into a lot more trouble than I was already getting myself into, because I would have just I would have ate that shit up if I was a part of that culture. But we were like,
totally,
you know, wine, like really awesome, like great talks, just staying up super late, and then like sometimes going out dancing, but sometimes just like watching TV and hanging out. But there was always just like, each person brought a bottle of wine. So we were like each all drinking like a bottle of wine, or, you know, a bottle of wine and a half, or,
oh yeah,
you know, whatever.
I just read this thing, Kaylee, and it was like, have you ever felt panic when there's only one bottle of wine for multiple people? And I was like, yes, I can totally relate to that.
I remember running out once and going to the back of my car and being like, wait, I think I have like a bottle of white Trader Joe's in my trunk. And it was like warm, and we were like, great.
Oh, it didn't
like,
matter.
Let's open it up.
Table, yeah, white table wine.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I feel like somewhat similar to you, since we obviously hung out in our early 20s while we were drinking.
Yeah.
But I lived on what would be considered campus, not in campus limits, like, but a couple streets away
from
college bars.
Yeah.
I did not go to the four-year university. I went to the community college, which I never made friends at, and I didn't invest any of my time there. I wish now that I would have, probably, because I think that it would have been so much more beneficial for my education. But that's a community college. It's so different.
Yeah.
And for those of you who don't know, most of you probably will, but Eugene is home to the U of O, which is a great academic school, has a great journalist program, awesome sports, right? So what happens when you have sports? You have football. You have, like, after parties. There's, like, a pretty heavy bar crowd. There's, like, parties in the front yards, you know, like your typical college campus, like semi-small town, like 160,000 people. So, but we participated in some of that because we lived near the campus.
Yeah, I did have some friends, especially like I was dating a guy at the time who was friends with a bunch of DJs. So they would DJ college party basements.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was going on around us all the time. So I think that it just made our drinking habits kind of blend in better. Like, we lived in an apartment complex and or every house around us like housed a student.
Yeah.
So there was parties constantly. It was just so easy to like slip in and out at 2 a.m. and be so loud and no one cared. We lived in a place where it was acceptable. Also, I need to mention, rent for a two-bedroom, one-bathroom when I lived there was $595 a month. Take me back.
Oh, my God. It's so hard. It's so hard to be like, yeah. So and funny. That's like, I could totally like, it's so weird because I was making $12 an hour, working as much as I could, but probably like 32 hours a week because I was going to school. And I was, my apartment was like $525 a month, which it was like a small apartment. It was like,
your apartment was so cute though.
It was
the one by Skinner's Butte.
Yeah, the one that was like in front of a food bank and next to the this bridge that was a little unsettling. But
well, now it's cool because it's by a cider house.
Yeah, now it's hip because it's by a cider house and like a brewery and whatever. But
other alcohol culture exists.
But I felt like I had more money than I ever had in my life. Like, I was just I never didn't have money to go out drinking. I was like, yeah, this is great. I am going to take my little baby ass paycheck and I'm going to, or, you know, you work where you get like some tips and be like, great, I'm going to spend all this on alcohol.
Yeah. Yes. All of it.
And still be able to pay my rent. So I'm going to have no like repercussions
at all. I know. And I would get those ham and cheese Hot Pockets from Circle K when I had some extra.
I do still love a good Hot Pocket every now and again. So I'm not going to lie. They're
so good.
There's some in our freezer.
So going back to that, so we got a little bit of the, you know, the college campus like habitual Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday fun day.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so it's like a 4-day weekend.
Yeah,
always, even though I was working 40 hours a week, so and I wasn't going to college and I was still just drinking like I was. But then we would go out downtown in the Bermuda, where like all of the bars were near each other. So you just like bounced around.
Yeah, the Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. So I kind of got a little bit of all of it, but I was also part of like this like party subculture, right? So like stretching our ears, like wanted to be part of this cool, you know, crowd, this like body modification crowd. And there was like plenty of sober people that were older in that community. But otherwise, everyone just got fucked up all the time. And I always wanted to be cool enough for everyone in that group. So I feel like I definitely crossed over into some of that partying for a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
I always think it's interesting to hear about people's like early 20s and what culture they come from or what they would consider themselves like as far as like a drinking community goes.
Because it's like, you're all doing the same thing, like you're all drinking.
But you're all doing different things while you're drinking or like in different places, so.
Yeah, you would have like, oh, the people that like go to Max's on campus and stand on the tables and sing Sweet Caroline
and
at night.
And spill popcorn.
Yeah, or you have the people.
Remember the popcorn?
Yes. But then you have like, oh, like too cool for that. Like we're going to go to, you know, this other like. They were all dive bars is the thing.
They're so gross. Like, one thing I do not miss.
Dive bar bathroom?
When you would leave your debit card the night before, and then you have to go there during the day, and you smell the leftover, like, residue left over from the night before.
Ew.
And your feet stick to the fucking bar floor.
Yeah.
That is always, like, one of the things that just gets me, man.
Ugh.
No. I don't ever have to do that again.
That and, like, dive bar bathrooms.
I
don't remember where I was, but it was a bathroom situation that, like, totally threw me back. And I was like, wow, I've been in a lot of really terrible bathrooms with, like, no lock, with, like, vomit in the sink. Like,
mm-hmm.
I, you know, will still go to places that serve alcohol, but it's usually more of a place that I'm going to get dinner. So it, you know, they haven't had a lot of violations. There's
right,
you know, the bathroom has a door. It's usually a little bit more legit. So I'm glad I'm past my bar bathroom days for sure.
I love that for both of us.
Well, I feel like we should start getting into, we've probably touched on it a little bit already, but how we got to here, like when we started questioning that relationship with alcohol. We both mentioned that it was, for the most part, kind of a great time. And so what changed, or what was kind of the trigger that flipped for you, or switch that flip, not trigger, flip,
well,
switch flip both. For you, that
I was triggered constantly during that time.
Yeah. What made you decide that maybe this wasn't something that you wanted to be doing anymore?
Well, I feel like that's like, it just starts so far back, and yeah. Now that I'm not drinking, I see that. But a lot of it started when I met Steve, who's my husband. We've been together, we're coming up on 8 years, and married for 2 years.
Congratulations!
Yeah! He's hot, so...
He's really buff, and he's great. We all love, everyone loves Steve. Like, there's not a person
Steve's
who doesn't like
easy,
him.
Yeah. And he's kind, I feel like. So that kind of is what it was. I met Steve and he was so kind, and our relationship was super toxic. So for the first 6 to 8 months, even close to a year and a half to 2 years. And, you know, I've talked about it before a little bit with some of my friends and with Steve and therapy, obviously. But I remember when we drank together, it was not good. And then Steve just actively just made the choice one day that he just wasn't going to drink alcohol anymore. He was trying to lose weight, I think, for his health. And it just, I remember him saying it's not good for the gains. So shout out to Steve for that.
Yeah.
And it also wasn't good for our relationship. And honestly, our problems were reduced by 50%. And not because Steve was the problem, but because when two people are drinking in a relationship, there's a lot more exposure to blowout fights and miscommunication and, you know, just argumentative and irritated behavior the next day even. And so he got to know himself more. And then it just kind of encouraged me not to drink. I mean, he never asked me not to drink.
Sure.
We never discussed my drinking. I would ask him to say, like, I'd be like, hey, I'm not going to drink tonight. So will you, like, remind me? And he'd be like, nope, like, that is all you, girlfriend. I love you, but I need you to make that choice for yourself. I can't really be your babysitter
and enforcer, which, like, you never, because the thing is,
it's like a diet, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, I would tell Danny, who's my partner, that I would, like, I'm not gonna drink for a while, and then I would drink, and then he would be like, I thought you weren't gonna do that, and then I would get mad at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't hold me accountable, you asshole.
Asshole. Yeah. So long story short, I cut back on my drinking frequency, but every time I was drinking, I still noticed I was going overboard and doing things I regretted immediately. So the guilt of my decisions while drinking is definitely what created a shift. I also at the same time was just learning about myself a little bit more and gained some confidence, which felt really good.
Yes.
But my drinking increased so much from 2019 to 2020. Daily drinking, White Claws on the way home from work. I needed a White Claw if I was going to mow the lawn, which I mow our lawn. It's one of my favorite activities. But even just like getting ready to go somewhere, like I needed a White Claw, or if we were going to go somewhere for dinner, then I would bring White Claws.
Yep.
This should be like a White Claw ad.
I know.
But yeah, any kind of hard seltzer really shifted the way that I felt about drinking. I was like, oh, it's not as bad as like a beer or hard liquor. So it's easy and can't really smell it on my breath. And it's not very expensive. I only buy 2 tall boys every day. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I had a friend who said that she was going to cut back on drinking, Kaylee being one of them, but not this particular friend. And I was like, I'm not going to drink all month with you. I think I lasted 3 days.
Yeah. Oh, I've totally been there. Yes.
And then I kind of lied.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, I haven't been drinking. Oh, I just had one, but we're 15 days in, which was a bold-faced lie. And she had quit drinking around the holidays for her own reasons. There was stuff going on in her personal life. And I noticed how much her life improved just not doing it for even 2 weeks. And me just being like, oh my gosh, if she can do it, then I can do it. Like, she deserves that. And so do I. And so I stopped talking about it. And January 1st, New Year's resolution, I was just going to do 30 days without it. But once I hit my 30 days, I was like, holy shit, this has been such a good 30 days.
Yeah, I remember after that, you were like, I honestly don't know if I ever want to drink again, which is also like,
literally,
we both said, like, it's okay if that ends up being a choice for you, because whatever it ends up being is going to be way more informed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was cool to hear you say that and be like, yes, I'm so excited for you, because we're only, you know, like 100 days behind each other. So I was like, I remember, like, after a month, it gets so much easier and you just really start to actually see the benefits of not fucking doing it anymore.
Dude, after the first 2 weeks for me, 14 days was probably the hardest.
Yeah.
But yeah, once I believed in myself that I could not drink for 30 days, something changed in me.
Yeah.
And that's not everyone else's experience, right? Like, you can call them relapses, you can call them slips, whatever you want to call them. You know, if you have committed to just 30 days and then drinking again, like any of it, but any amount of time that you are actively choosing not to have alcohol in your life, you are working that day to stay, you know, stick with that. That's better than not doing it all, in my opinion. And so I just think that something in me just changed and I just realized it wasn't serving me in my life anymore. And yeah, so here we are.
I love the message as well, that I feel like sometimes people who don't drink definitely get a bad rap for just, you know, you always think the straight edge people, which I'm not, more on that later, but just you think that as a drinker that people are judging you. And the thing is A, we're not, and B, someone who
not at all
decided to not drink for a week and then is drinking again, like, that's still so hard and so cool that you did that. Like, I hope, even if it was just for a week, that it made you feel powerful and in control of your own life and get it.
Yeah. so much of that. And like, and yeah, just recognizing that you stayed present in your life for that amount of time, right? Like, and with the way that the world is and has always been and is, making the choice to not check out is huge.
What I told myself was, I know this is really hard and it sucked, but I did it for 5 days, so I'm just going to start the clock over and do it again and see how long I can go. And then I did 30 days, and then I was like, cool, I'm going to start the clock over and see how long. And there'd be, you know, different time periods in between those gaps too, where I would go back to drinking.
Tell us quickly about that. Yeah. I want a recap of your experience.
Yeah. So I have diary entries probably until like back from 2013 or maybe even earlier, just about my relationship with drinking and how I, like, I am on SSRIs. I have persistent depressive disorder, and so it actually makes them not work. We hate to hear it. We hate to hear it, but it's true. Like, if you don't want to be depressed, not drinking alcohol is not going to solve everything, but it is a really big help. And so I think especially when COVID happened is when I did my last bout of where I am now at 318 days, because I just really wanted to focus on my physical and mental health, because I was not doing good.
But, I was in a dark place, man.
Yeah. So With drinking on top of that, it was just like, wow, I really feel myself going into a really dark hole and I kind of want to,
yeah,
I have to crawl out now or I'm going to live here. So,
well, and it's like giving yourself an honest attempt at, you know, like being able to regulate your emotions and feel okay.
Yeah. And weight loss too was a huge motivator for me. And so I was doing personal training and my personal trainer would be like, okay, like it seems like you know, your food was pretty good. Like, I'm not really seeing anything here that would significantly affect, like, why you're not losing weight. And you're working out with me, like, 3 days a week. And, you know, you're doing supplementary stuff. You're going on runs. Like, I don't get it. And I'm like, oh, well, I do drink, like, a bottle and a half of wine every night. And she was like, okay.
Like, dude, no one talks about that.
Yeah.
That's not something we talk about very often. And I've never thought of alcohol that way because, and I'm convinced of this, and this is a theory, we will wrap back around to this, but if we were taught of the actual implications of alcohol throughout our education, just like not being taught about credit scores and not being taught about, you know, taxes, there's just so many things that are missing from the U.S. and I'm sure all over the world education. So yeah, I hear you there. That's real.
Yeah, so I think it started as like, I'm not gonna do this because it just really doesn't make sense to, even if I'm having a white claw, I'm having 5 to 6 white claws, so it really kind of ends up being a full meal for me, and it just doesn't make sense to do this if I really want to be serious about, you know, losing weight and getting in shape, then I need to kind of kick this. And so that motivation was like the, oh, okay, I didn't do it for 30 days or I didn't do it for 5 days, but it really wasn't enough to get me to stick to it. It was only after doing it for like, I don't know, 60 days, I think, that I was like, okay, cool. Like, I'm seeing all the other benefits of this and I really want to make this work. And then I think it's all wedding related. I love weddings and I love getting drunk at weddings because alcohol's free and the wedding starts early and you just keep drinking and then it's this big party and you want to be having as much fun as everyone and you might not know a bunch of people and you get nervous. And so like weddings are a big trigger for me. So I did, it was my sister's wedding. No, I was sober at my sister's wedding. I got drunk at another wedding after that. And yeah, I just didn't really know anyone. I felt super uncomfortable and everyone was having a good time and I just decided like, you know what, I'm going to make this conscious decision. It's a special event. It's an occasion. I'm going to do it. And I'm going to be one of those people where I can do it on vacation and I can do it at weddings and I can do it at these things. And that's just the only time I allow myself to do this. And very quickly after, it was back to stopping by, you know, the 7-Eleven on the way home from work. And just, it's so easy to get right back into it. It's like, oh, when you eat junk food. Yeah. Like, it tastes so good that then you start craving it more and more. And so,
totally.
So yeah, I got to a point where kind of similarly, it was probably difficult to be in a relationship with me because you wouldn't know what would trigger me to make me start bawling and feeling super insecure and bad about myself. And I was definitely hiding how much I was drinking from my partner, and that felt shitty and not great.
Me too. I was doing the same thing. Just so you know.
Yeah, and I would
it doesn't feel great, but
I would tell him later, like, you know, one of the reasons I want to quit drinking is I feel like you go to bed, or I try and drink as much as possible when you're not home. So then, or I'll put my wine, I don't know. I would just like not want him to know how much I was drinking because my partner drinks, but he's someone who can have 2 beers and just be done. And he's like, cool, that was a great experience. Like, I'm over it now. And I'm a, like, once you pop, you can't stop kind of.
Yeah. And my husband, right, Steve, is the type of drinker who can drink on vacation and not drink at all when he's home, or drink at a wedding, or have 1 beer camping. I think this year he's had 3 drinks of alcohol in 2 drinks in 2021.
That's again, like, idolizing other people's, you know, journey, and everyone's is going to be different, and everyone's relationship with alcohol and their own just tendencies for addiction and things like that are going to be different. But that's ideal. Like, that is choice. And part of me is like, maybe at this point, at this stage, I could transition into something like that. But at this point, I'm so proud of myself. And because I have low self-esteem, there's not a lot that I can look at and be like, wow, I'm really proud of myself for this. So being able to have my tracker and know that it's still going, I think having to hit restart on it at this point would be too crushing.
Yeah.
And I don't want to. Like, I want to, like, keep it going, keep it running so that I can be like, wow, this is so cool that I'm doing this.
Right. Yeah, that brings up something else. I want to give a huge shout out to every person that has ever liked my sobriety days after I've posted them, who's commented on any of my posts regarding being alcohol-free, who's just told me good job or they're proud of me. Like, it genuinely, it is, like, made up 85% of my success in not drinking. And I care a lot about what my friends and family think about my decisions, especially because I'm so proud of this one. So shout out to y'all, because it's awesome.
Yeah, I definitely second that. It's huge. And what's been cool is people that you would have no idea that will reach out to you and be like, hey, this is really interesting. Or like, hey, like, I went to dinner with two people recently that also didn't order drinks. And it was kind of that, like, oh, like, you can totally order a drink if you want. Like, I do not care.
Like, please order a drink. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm also going to get a delicious beverage. It's just not going to have alcohol in it. And they're like, oh, yeah, I actually, like, haven't really been drinking lately. And then it starts this whole conversation where I'm like, oh, my God, that's so cool. And so even if you don't think you know someone super well, slide into their DMs and just talk to them, because we're here for it. We love it.
Yes. And so Kaylee and I both have Instagram that we'll plug really quickly, because I know for myself, I'm starting to share a little bit more sober content. I'm still, like, on the fence. I don't want to annoy anyone, which is so silly in itself. And we will talk about that on another episode for sure. But I am Katie, KATY.Pelroy on Instagram. What's your handle? Okay.
Mine is at Kaylee Wolf without the O. So it's at KAYLEEWLF.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I have found a really great community on Instagram for being alcohol free or even sober curious or California sober. Like, there's just there is a place for everyone and what they are wanting to try, I feel like. And there's a really safe space for the most part from my experience. In-person meetups, Zoom meetings, like, all of the things. There's podcasts, right? There's so much knowledge and so much sharing going on social media that it has taken recovery or sobriety or being sober curious to another level.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we say Instagram handles, we are both millennials, so we are trying to get on the TikTok game, but honestly, it's a learning curve, so bear with us, but we will have more channels. We do have a website that we're getting content on soon, and then we also have our own Instagram handle for Dry Hard Pod, at Dry Hard Pod, that you can follow as well for updates of when we're going to have other episodes and things like that if you liked what you heard. And we'll also be getting better. This is our first time doing this. We're putting ourselves out there. Hope that you guys have enjoyed it, but we're definitely going to be improving it as time goes on. So if you have any feedback or topics that you want us to talk about, definitely hit us up on at Dry Hard Pod, because we'd love to hear it. But be nice, because we are sensitive.
Yeah, we still care a lot about what everyone thinks, by the way.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I did start a TikTok.
Yes. Okay, so what's your TikTok handle?
It's Katie Is Sober.
Love
K-A-T-Y.
It. K-A-T-Y, baby.
I-S-S-O-B-E-R. And I made one TikTok, and it was mortifying, and I got hives, but I was afterward, I was really proud of it, yet I did not share it on my Instagram page because I was like, I'm not ready for this kind of exposure. So we're working on it.
Yeah. It's hard.
But yeah, so I think for future episodes, they'll be coming weekly to everybody. Mm-hmm. We're going to cover a range of topics centered about trying to just be the best versions of ourselves and how to live full lives without alcohol. Like, I still want to be able to do all of the things that I did before, minus the shitty stuff. You know, I enjoy socializing. I enjoy being around people. And I think that just showing that life is still fun. We're still fun.
We're fun. We're cool moms.
Yeah. And we're also hoping to have people on our podcast. So
yeah,
you know, we've got a therapist in our circle. We've got active drinkers that we would love to have, you know, come on and talk about their relationship with alcohol.
Yeah. And there's no, you have to be at least 30 days sober in order to go on our podcast or anything like that. Like, we don't know what we're doing. We're still figuring it out in terms of our relationships with alcohol and how we want to live our best lives. So all people and stages are definitely welcome.
For sure. And then on that note, I did want to mention that if you're looking for something that is more than just a sober, like, day counting app, I've been using Reframe. It's an amazing science-based tool to help people cut back on their drinking, become more conscious about their drinking, or quit drinking altogether. There's like some amazing tools in those toolkits. We'll definitely link that information in our Instagram. We might even reference some of their statistics as this goes on, because I'd really like to bring in the like science behind alcohol and how it alters our minds and our bodies. And so if anyone's looking for something like that, it's $7 a month. If you use code Katie, you can get 15% off of your first in-app purchase. So a little plug there, but shout out to Reframe. They're doing amazing things for especially millennials that are questioning their relationship with alcohol.
Well, I hope everyone enjoyed our first podcast and our first episode. Definitely subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and get notified when we come out with new episodes. Follow us on social media. Let us know what you want to hear us talk about. And that's it.